Rav Shechter Shlita, Rashi Yeshiva Shlita, and Rabbi Berman. This morning we're going to mark the yard site of the second president of Yeshiva University, Rabbi Belkin, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And it is also around the time of the yard site of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, who our yeshiva is of course named for. Our yeshiva is a yeshiva of a rich mesorah. It's a yeshiva of great traditions. And it's one of the traditions of our yeshiva that the president of our yeshiva delivers a shir in honor of the past president of our yeshiva, Rabbi Belkin Zatzal. I was talking to our student president of yeshiva, Yoni Laub, and he shared with me a vart from Moreno Rav Shechter Shlita that I also saw in the name of Rav Baruch Ber, and it all obviously comes from the same place. It all comes from Rav Chaim. And the question is that in the answer given to the Ben HaRasha in the Haggadah, the answer doesn't match the answer given in the Torah to the Ben HaRasha. In the Torah itself, it says, "V'amartem zevach pesach hu la'Hashem." But that's not what it says in the Haggadah. That is not how the father answers the Ben HaRasha in the Haggadah. And the question is obvious, why the change from what it says in the Torah to the actual answer given in the Haggadah? And Rav Baruch Ber explained, and apparently Rav Soloveitchik explained as well, that when encountering the Rasha, the father sometimes needs to have a conversation with himself to strengthen his own resolve, his own beliefs, and his own values. The Torah does not say, "Va'amartem elav," that you should tell to the son. The Torah says, when you encounter the Rasha, sometimes you have to have a moment of "Vi'amartem," of just speaking to yourself, reminding yourself, "Zevach Pesach hu la'Hashem," strengthening your own values, your own emuna, and that which you stand for. And then, of course, in the Haggadah, we address the Ben HaRasha as we do. The role of president of yeshiva is to teach and inspire all types of Jews throughout the entire world, all four types of sons, and many, many more types of people. While at the same time, with all of the encounters, with all the different types of people, to always have that grounding in the Torah HaKadosha, that grounding in Avodas Hashem, in Emunah BaHashem, and to constantly remind ourselves, for the president to constantly remind himself, and for all of our B'nai Yeshiva and the Rebbeim of the Yeshiva, no matter what we encounter, to remind ourselves of what we stand for. Indeed, it is a moment that we have to have moments of V'amartem, not V'amartem Elav, but V'amartem, where we remind ourselves of our own values. The president is going to speak this morning on the topic of B'ni B'chori Yisrael, the privilege and responsibility of being chosen, and we are eager to hear his Divrei Torah in honor of Rabbi Belkin Zecher Tzadik Livracha. President Berman.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Leibowitz, for, as always, your incredibly poignant and inspiring and on-the-mark words. Brishus, Rashi Yeshiva, all of our honored guests, families of Dr. Belkin, who is here with us both in person and online. It is really a privilege. Each year, and especially after we return in person past the last couple of years, to return to our traditions and to have this year to mark the 125th yard site of Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector Zatzal and the 45th yard site of our second president, Rabbi Dr. Samuel Belkin. And it's so important for our yeshiva. What our yeshiva is about is to think about and mark our roots in order to plan for the future. And it's very relevant to be here today in honor of these, to commemorate these yard sites, Dafka, so close to the holiday of Pesach, so close to Geula. I was thinking this year about what topic we should devote this talk to, especially so close to Pesach and connecting, of course, our Masechet Baba Basra. And thinking it through, I thought it'd be very appropriate to speak about the topic of Bechor V'Nachala. The theme of Bechor is a central theme in the holiday of Pesach. If you look at source number one, everybody have the source sheets. There's some on the Bima if they're not. Are people missing? I think over there, if we can pass them. Somebody can pass them to the... Thank you. Vamarta El Paro, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, to El Paro, Komar Hashem, say to Paro, so says Hashem, B'ni B'chori Yisrael. That Yisrael is my son and is my firstborn. V'amari lecha shalachet b'ni v'avduni v'tame'en l'shalcho v'nei anochi horeget b'ncha b'chorcha. And he tells Paro, Hashem says to tell Moshe, to tell Paro, that if you do not free my ben, my Bechor, then fear what awaits your Bechor. The whole Yetzias Mitzrayim is intertwined with this theme of B'ni Bechori Yisrael, because it is at the root of Makot Bechorot. Makot Bechorot is not like any of the other Makot. It's intertwined and central to Yetzias Mitzrayim as well, Kechatzot HaLaila. It happened on Chatzot. It's intertwined with the very moment of liberation. That Makot Bechorot is essential to our understanding of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And all of it is rooted in the concept of B'ni Bechori Yisrael. And the questions that I'll pose at the beginning is, what exactly does it mean that we are the Bechor of Hashem? Obviously, we are not born first. We were not the first nation. Even in our foundational stories of each of the Avot, each of them independently were not born first, the Bechor of their own families, let alone the Bechor of the entire world. So what does it mean, B'ni Bechori Yisrael? That's number one. Number two, why is B'ni Bechori Yisrael so central and significant in the story of Pesach? As I said, that it highlights, especially in its inflection in Makot Bechorot. And three, what are its implications today? How does the fact that we are called B'ni Bechori Yisrael by Hashem in the Torah impact our lives at this very moment? Now, to understand this, I want to bring us back to Baba Basra and bring us back to learning the sugya. What exactly does it mean to have a Bechor L'Nachla on Pishnayim? Now, I personally, when I in preparation of this year, as we go through the years and the Masechtas, I have to say I was very excited about Baba Basra. I love Baba Basra. And I learned it here. I learned it a few times in yeshiva. First under Mori Varabi Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal and Yeshivat Har Etzion. And then here, when I was in NYU, is the year after Smicha, before Kol Elyon. There used to be a gap between Smicha and Kol Elyon. You had to learn a year between. And I had the zchus of being in Rav Shechter's Kolo. And we were learning Baba Basra. And Rav Shechter, as his Kol is doing this year, is learning the last 40 blots of Baba Basra, starting with the Yesh Nochlin. So I heard Chaburot from Rav Shechter, and based on the yeshivot and the style that I was learning previously, it was the first time I actually learned 40 blots in an Ian way, which was very remarkable and taught me a lot, actually, about the importance of covering ground in Ian. And like with everything that I learned, I spoke frequently with Rabbi Mori Rav Rosenzweig, about all of my learning. And it was really just a great year. You know, you could picture the Beis Medrash a little bit. We were in the, for the Shechter's Kol, we're in the third floor in First Hall. We don't do that anymore. Where's the Shechter's Kol learners here now? It used to be we learned in the JSS, with the JSS Beis Medrash. I learned with Yaki Blau. And right next to me was Eli Reich and Rafael Willig. It was really a rocking a group. It was a rocking table. And then the Beis Medrash in general is just so much fun. You had Rabbi Tsarfati, Rabbi Hirsch, Rabbi Adler, Rabbi Konigsberg, Rabbi Simon, Rabbi Packer, who hasn't left, Mamash, my chaver from back then, Rabbi Penner. So all of us just inhabited the Beis Medrash. And I thought it would be nice to share with you some Torah that emerged from that Beis Medrash so many decades ago. So the concept of Bechor Lanachla seems pretty straightforward, especially when you think about Yerusha, you know, when a father passes away. So each son divides the property, inherits the property, and the Bechor inherits double. So you think very simply that Bechor Lanachla is like Yerusha, just instead of one portion, you receive two portions. When you investigate it further, you'll find lots of peculiar features to this double portion that cry for a broader hesber, broader explanation. So if you look, for example, at source number one, the Mishnah says, "Abachor noto pishnayim." I'm sorry, source number three on your page. The Mishnah says, "Abachor noto pishnayim benichse ha'av, ve'eno noto pishnayim benichse ha'em, ve'eno noto b'shevach v'lo b'ra'i k'b'mufsach," which is what I want to focus on. That the Bechor takes Pishnayim from the Nichse Av, from the estate of the father, not the Nichse Aim. He doesn't take Shevach. We won't talk about that at the moment, but very connected to the next line. And he doesn't inherit the Roi, he only inherits the Muchsak. What does it mean? You inherit the Muchsak. What does that mean? Not Roi, but the Muchsak. What does that mean? Actually, I think the Kol Elyon also learns the last 40 blocks. So you have everyone here for Shechter's Kol and the Kol Elyon. Just want to keep that in mind. What does that mean that they're only inherit the Muchsak? What does that mean? Again? The double, that's true. They inherit double. Thank you, Machmar. Yes? Yeah. So you only inherit the stuff, the property that the father actually has, that he's Muchsak in, but not things that he's roi to get afterwards. What does it mean, roi to get? What's an example of something that the father doesn't have? He's where he's not muchsuk, but it's roi. So for example, let's say take Terech, Avram, and Yitzchak. So let's say Terech passes away, and Avram inherits his, let's say Avram passes away, and Reuven inherits Avram's property. And then afterwards, Terech passes away. So all of Terech's property goes into Avram's estate. And it'll be divided between Avram's children. So that property that did not exist when Avram actually died, he wasn't muchzak in it. So Reuven doesn't get double for that. Reuven gets as a pashut. He gets as, of course, each of the sons would naturally inherit property that comes to the estate after the father passes away. But if the father doesn't own that property when he's alive, then there's no double portion. There's no pishnayim. There's no double portion for that property. How do we know this? So the Gemara says, if you look at the bottom of source number three, it says, what's the source? Lo b'ray k'muchzik d'chsiv b'chol asher yimatzei lo. If you look back in source number two, and the psukim talk about the Bechor Lanachla, it says, Yakir Latelo Pishnaim Bechola Sher Yimatzelo. You only get Pishnaim on property that was found by the father. The father actually owned anything he did not own yet. For example, property that his estate inherits later, or a debt perhaps that comes in later. All the property that comes in later, that you don't get Pishnaim for. You only get Pishnaim for what the father actually owns at the time. So keep that in mind. That is one of the rules when it comes to Bechor Lanachla. Take a second interesting halacha called Yakir. Now, normally, if you think about who are the heirs, the heir, for example, takes sons. The heir are any child that's born from the father is an heir of the father. But the halacha is, when it comes to Bechor, it's a little more complicated. For example, look at source number 4. At the end of the Mishnah in Bechoros, V'chei mi shalosh shasa la'achar ba'al ha'shlosh ha'chadashim, V'nisseid b'yolda, V'en yodua im ben tisha l'rishon im ben shiva l'achron, V'chor l'koyim v'enu b'chor l'nachal. Let's say you have a woman whose husband passed away, and then she remarries quickly. So she remarries after a month, and then she's find out that she's pregnant, and one doesn't know whose father the child is. Is it from the first husband or is it from the second husband? So you're not sure what to do. The Mishnah tells you it's not a case of Bechor Lenachla. You get Bechor Lekoin, it's the Peterechem, but it's not Bechor Lenachla. Let's carry this a little further. The Gemara in Bechor says, explains in source number 5. Let's say you write a harsha. You know what? I'll give you a different case to make it even perhaps more clear. Let's say you have two women who are giving birth in a cave. Why would they give birth in a cave? I don't know. Could be they're in hiding and they give birth in a cave. The point is it's completely dark and they don't know which child is whose. Which child is whose? They don't know which child is from which mother. And then the fathers pass away. And the question is, do these children inherit their fathers? What would you say? Would these children inherit the father? What would you think? Then no? Thank you, Achmar. Okay, no is definitely a possibility. Why would they not inherit their father? Why would they not inherit the father? Because you don't know. You don't know which father it is. You don't know. Thank you. You don't know which father it is. So what would you do in that situation? So you're not sure which father it is. You have two sons. They certainly come from one of the fathers. Each one comes from a father. What could they possibly do? What would you say? What could they possibly do? Say again? What can they possibly do? They don't know which one's their father. What would they do? Say again? Harsha. So please explain what's Harsha. So each one can authorize the other to collect on his behalf. Look, we know you have two fathers with two estates. You know that these children are there. These two boys are sons of these two fathers. It's a suffix. You don't know which one. Brothers can push them off and say, oh, you're not our brother. But each one can write a harsha for the other. And they could collect on behalf of the other person. They could collect and then they could divide it amongst themselves as they see fit. Okay, it's all part of the rules of suffix mamon. How would you deal with any situation? You're not sure what to do. Each one can write a harsha for the other. The Gemara says, if you look at source number 6 and source number 7, then when it comes to this case by Bechor, they can't write a harsha to each other. Why can't they write a harsha to each other? Because in the pasuk, when it talks about Bechor Lenachla, it says Yakir. Father needs to recognize, or it needs to at least be recognizable. He needs to recognize his son. There was no opportunity for the father to ever have hakara, to recognize his son. That child cannot be a bechor, meaning it's not a case of safek. Right? If it was just a case of safek mama, they could write harsha like they would by nachala. When it comes to bechor, the second portion, it's not a safek. The bechor, no one can ever collect. There's no harsha. Similarly, as if you look at source number 7, a bechor shenole la'achar misas aviv. Let's say the bechor was born after the father died. Let's say the wife had twins, was carrying twins, and the father passes away. The children are then born. So do these sons, there are two sons, do these sons inherit? Are they heirs? Are they Yorish? What's the answer? Yes, of course, they inherit. But is there Pishnayim in that situation? Does the Bechor get double? So the Gemara says the Bechor doesn't get double. My Taima, Yakir Amarachmana, Bahalesa the Yakir, because the Pasuk says Yakir, you have to have Hakara. Okay, and of course, as the Rashbam says, Kol Roy Labila, Bila Eno Makevet, you don't physically have to be there, but at least it has to be the opportunity of Hakara, Yakir. And if the father's dead, they cannot be Hakara, and therefore there's no Pishnayim. The Ritva, in source number 8, says it's not just even when he is halach when he's dead. Even if the father's a goses, meaning halachically he's alive, but he's in a situation where it's impossible for him to have Hakara. There's no Yakir, and there's no Pishnayim in such a case. Okay, so that's a second halacha. The first one I said, b'chol asheyir matzelo, from the pasuk, you can only take pishnayim from what's muchsak, what the father owned when the father was alive. And the second point is yakir, that the father has to, the child has to be born and recognized or recognizable. If he's born after the father dies, or if it was born in a cave and it was mixed up and there was never any hakara, in those cases, there's no din of Bechor Lenachla. There's no halacha of Bechor Lenachla in those cases. Okay, a third halacha, and then we'll talk about what's the explanation of this, relates to Mechila, Davar Shel Balalom. If you look at source number 9, the Mishnah says, Omer Ish Ploni B'ni Bechor Lo Yito Pishnayim. If somebody says that I don't want my son, my firstborn son will not get Pishnayim, he'll not get double. My son will not get double. The Mishnah says, Lo amar klum. Shehisna mashikasa b'Torah. Mishnah says that it's, irrelevant what he says because he's masna mashikasa b'Torah. The Torah says that the Bechor gets double. The father says, my Bechor won't get double. We ignore what the Bechor says. The Gemara asks, so is this Mishnah not like Rabbi Yehuda, who says, if you're masna mashikasa b'Torah on a davar shebamama on tanai kayim? And the Gemara answers that Rabbi Yehuda is talking about a different case, a case in Kedushin when there is Mechila, but here there is no Mechila. What does it mean there is no Mechila? So the Rashbam says the implication of the Gemara is that if a son would be Mochel, his inheritance, let's say during the father's life, the son says, you know what? I don't want to inherit. I don't want to get Bechor. I want out of this. Is that a good mechila or not? The Rashbam says, from this Gemara, it implies that that is a mechila, it's mochel, it's gone. The Rashba, however, if you look at source number 12, I'll just refer it to you, and we won't read it inside. The Rashba says, no, that there is no mechila in such a case. Why is there no mechila in such a case? Because it's a davar, it's a davar shlobo la'olam. Because the property isn't owned by the son at the time. Meaning, are you able to sell property that you don't have, that you don't own? Can I go over to, Rabbi Leibowitz has a wonderful jacket. And I'm planning on buying that jacket. In 10 minutes, I'm going to go and buy that jacket from Rabbi Leibowitz. I won't look as good as him in it, but I want to buy that jacket. So can I go now and sell to somebody else that jacket? No, it's not mine yet. It's not mine yet. It's not my, it's Davar Shein HaBrashusi, Davar Shel Bololam. It's not mine yet. Something that comes later, that's going to come later to me, or it's going to be created later to me, I don't own it yet. I don't have control. I can't sell it. And I can't give a matana. I can't do anything with it. So the Rashba says similarly for Mechila. He can't be mochel. It has nothing to do with him yet. When does it become in the power of the heir of the Yoresh to do something about it? The moment he inherits it, let's say after the father passes away. Let's say then he could be mochel. We won't go into that right now. But certainly during his life, the Rashbam argues, and the Rashbam says he can't, anything he says is a nitpas, doesn't matter, davar shelo balol. Interestingly, the Or Zeruah splits between the Rashba and the Rashbam. And the Or Zeruah in source number 13, I feel a real affinity to Or Zeruah at this moment, because we just literally walked the streets of the Or Zeruah, the shul of the Or Zeruah, mamash, we're in the makom of the Or Zeruah, just a couple of weeks ago. And the Or Zeruah says that it depends. Then when it comes to Yerusha, it's a davar shel bal olam. There is no power for the heir to mochel his future inheritance. When it comes to Bechor Lenachala, however, when it comes to Pishnayim, he's able to be mochel. And of course, the question is, why? Why would it be that there's a distinction between Yerusha, between inheritance, and Pishnayim when it comes to Mechila? Both of them only come later. Everybody would agree the Bechor can't sell his Pishnayim now. Everybody would agree to that. Why would Mechila be any different? What is the connection that the Bechor has to this property? The Yorish doesn't have it. They're going to get it later in their lives. Why would that Mechila actually work? So all these three things about not taking Roi, but only taking Muchzak, the concept of Yakir applying specifically to Bechor Lenachla, and a Davar Shlo Bal Olam, and how it relates to Bechor Lenachla, is explained with an idea that I heard from Mori V'Rabbi, Rabbi Rosenzweig. Rabbi Rosenzweig understands that Bechor Lenachla is fundamentally different than Yerusha. It might appear similar in that it's the second portion of the inheritance. You get one, you just get double, you get a second one. But actually, they're two very different concepts. Then Yerusha is driven by genealogy, in which one's status is determined by birth, and one becomes a Yoresh after the father dies. But Bechor is not genealogy, it's a relationship. It's a relationship between father and son due to the special place that the Bechor has in the family. As the first of his strength, Reishit Ono, and the Gemara talks about, I won't go into, about the emotional attachment of Libo Deva Alav, the emotional attachment that the father has to the Bechor. As the child who sets the tone for the rest of the children of the family, the Bechor is the conduit of the values of the father to his family. While, of course, he's an independent child, the father sees in him the continuity of the family traditions and their purpose. As we see in, you know, pre-Matan Torah, who was the ones who brought the karbanot? It was the Bechor of each family. The Bechor of each family was the Kohen. You know, of course, there was a switch to a class of Kohanim, but the model of the idea that the father's relationship with the Bechor, the special relationship as the firstborn, the one that there's a special attachment to, was the conduit of his values to the rest of the family, still remained and was formalized in some sense by the Bechor Lenachla. But because it's about a relationship rather simply than genealogy, a number of halachot emerge. First of all, ro'i and muchzak. The status only lasts while the father is alive. Once the father dies, that's it. That's the estate closed. The estate is closed because it's about their relationship. It's closed in what the son can receive as a double portion. Ro'i doesn't apply. Since the issue is not genealogy inheriting an estate, a yoresha would apply. But it's the special relationship while the father was alive to his son. Once the father dies, it's over. In addition, it only begins if there's yakir. Of course, in a formal halachic sense, it doesn't physically have to be yakir, as kolorai lebila. But the idea that if there cannot be a recognition, if there's no moment of yakir, for example, if the child is born after the father died, or when the father's a goseis, or was in a cave and mixed up, or there was no havchana then first husband and second. The whole idea of Bechor is rooted in a physical recognition and emotional attachment. So it's not birth itself, which is sufficient, but you also need Yakir. And for another time, it could be that Yakir defines birth when it comes to Bechor. There's a Machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, and Bechoros, and the Rambam, and the Griz on that. We're not going to talk about that now. But the idea that Yakir is central, because what we're really talking about is an emotional attachment, a physical recognition, a relationship between father and son. And that's how Rosenzweig explains the Or Zeruah. For a while, the property is not yet in the son's possession, right? He's not yet, he can't sell it. Because it emerges from a relationship, it's sufficiently thought of in the son's realm that he can mochel it now. When it comes to Yoresh, a Yoresh becomes a Yoresh after the father passes away. Then he becomes a Yoresh. But the Bechor is a Bechor right away. The Bechor is a Bechor all throughout life. It ends when the father dies. It begins at Yakir, and he's a Bechor all throughout his life. And therefore, because he's a Bechor throughout his life, and he has that status of Bechor, there's some connection to it. That according to the Or Zeruah, one shita, but a great shita from Vienna, one shita, that you're able to be mochel it because there's some connection to it, there's some relationship to it. Now, with this understanding, you can understand all the psukim better when it comes to Bechor Lenachla. If you go back to the beginning of your shor sheet, you see, there's an amazing introduction to the whole concept of Bechor Lenachla. The psukim say, if you look at source number 2, Itiena le'ish tei nashim, achat ahuva v'achat tznua. If a man has two wives, one ahuva, a beloved wife, one less beloved, v'yodlo banim ahuva v'asnua, and he has sons to the ahuva and to the snua, v'haya ben ha-bechor l'snia, v'haya, and the older son, the ben ha-bechor, is to the less loved wife, you're not allowed to switch the Bechor. The Pasuk teaches us in Devarim, this is how it introduces the whole concept of Pishnayim. It introduces the concept by teaching you're not allowed to switch. You're not allowed to switch from Ben Snua to Ben Ova. Get the Bechor Ben Snua, Yakir, you recognize. To give him matana. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that Zeruah places Shita in the context of the fact that the Pishnaim is called the matana. It's a gift, which is reflective in Rabbi Rosenzweig's language of that relationship. Everything that is found to him, kihure shita ono, lo mishpata b'chora. Now the question is, why would you think otherwise? Why does the Torah introduce this whole concept of Bechor with the possibility of switching it, that the Torah has to tell you, you can't switch it? Why would you think that you could switch it? You can't switch Yerusha. Why can you switch? Why would you think you could switch Bechor? By the way, anybody have any thought about that? Why would you think you could switch Bechor? Say again. It happens in the Torah. I personally think that the psukim and dvarim are clearly in dialogue with those in Bereishis, specifically ben ahuva and ben asnua. Where do we see a ben ahuva and ben asnua? Yafa, shkayach machamar. So you see it clearly when it comes to Leah and Rachel, clearly, and even earlier you mentioned even with one mother. In some sense, but Ben Ova, Ben Ova, clearly. And the whole Sefer Bereishis is this, these stories of meditations of places in family, you know, and switching and brachot and succession. You know, so there's in reflection of Bereishis, the Sefer Dvarim in Moshe telling Am Yisrael that Hashem is saying, that when it comes to the pishnaim, you cannot switch that. Brachot may be different, other ways of succession, but there's some things which are immutable and codified as immutable, like that relationship as reflected in pishnaim with the father and his bechor. And because it's about relationships, that's another reason you have a hava mina that the father could switch it. Well, if it's about relationships, okay, I like the other one better. So there's a sense that immutability, that the bechor is the bechor, at least when it comes to pishnaim, the bechor is the bechor, and it can't be changed. And in that sense, it's really amazing. The Ramban, Halotor in the Sefer Mitzvos, talks about the fact that there's both a mitzvah aseh and a lota aseh when it comes to trying to switch the bechor. You have to give the bechor pishnaim, and it's usur, it's a lota aseh to try to switch it. And the Ramban says that lota aseh only applies for the bechor himself. Let's say the bechor passes away. What happens to the pishnaim? The bechor has children, and the bechor passes away. What happens to the pishnaim? Those children inherit his double portion. They split it, and they inherit his double portion. Ramban says, if the father tries to change that, there's no lav. Lav is only if the father's changing with the bechor. Because in Rabbi Rosenzweig's language, it's all about the relationship between the father and the bechor. So the isser is reflected in the father and the bechor. And when it comes to the grandchildren, there's still dinei mamonos involved. They still are able, they're still supposed to get it, but there's no isser because it's not there about the personal relationship. But this is a background. Understand the whole concept of bechor. I think we could also understand why it's at the center of the Pesach story. Why at the center of the Pesach story is the concept of B'ni Bechori Yisrael. Once I turn to that shkafic part, it's a good time for a water break. Everybody's able to. Why is it that B'ni Bechori Yisrael, that we, the Jewish people, are Hashem's Bechor, lies at the heart of the story of Mitzrayim? It's the reason for Makat Bechorot. What exactly does that mean? Number one, what does it mean that we're the Bechor? We were not the firstborn. Even in our foundational stories, as I said, our Avot were not the firstborn. So in what sense are we the Bechor? Number one. Number two, why is it central in the Roman Mitzrayim? And then three, what are the implications for us today? So based on the shir, we see the Bechor means much more than the order of birth. It's about the special relationship between a father and son, one in which there are privileges and benefits, but also purpose and responsibility. It's not just about being Bechor, it's also about being Nivchar. It's about being chosen. And like Bechor, as we find in our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, there are aspects that are immutable, that the father cannot change the Bechor, lo yuchal levaker. There are aspects that are immutable, like it is with the Jewish people, B'ni Bechori Yisrael, as we see during the Seder, right? That all of the children are invited to the Seder, the Ben Ahuva and the Ben Asnua, the Chacham Tam Rasha She'enu De'elishol, the Lifnei HaMakom, before Hashem, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, before Hashem, everyone is, all of the children are the Bechor. Everyone is in B'ni Bechor Yisrael. It's immutable. That relationship is permanent. And there are three aspects of this relationship that I'd like to bring into focus. There are three characteristics that distinguish the Bechor from what we've seen in the Gemara's earlier. That number one, the Bechor only applies to the Muchzak, right? What's when you have a Chazak on. Number two, there's a component of Yakir. And number three, it's not considered in the same way a davar shalobo la'olam. Each of these three illuminates our relationship as B'ni Bechori Yisrael Takadosh Baruch Hu. Number one, when it comes to Muchzak, we also have an inheritance, and it's also called a matana. Umimibar matana, umimatana nachliel, umimachilel bamot. As the Gemara in the Darim says, that kevan shosa adam es atzmo kimidbar shu mufkar lekol torah nitzin lo b'matana shenamra mimbimar matana v'kevan shenitin lo b'matana nichla'o kel that we have a matana, that Torah is a matana, and that if we give ourselves over fully, like a midbar to the matana, then that matana becomes our inheritance from Hashem. There is a matana that is a nachala, and that, of course, is our Torah. As we learn in Avot, that the Aluchot Maisa Elokim Hema, Altik Racharas Elacherish, Enlecha Bencho, Misha Osek Batalma Torah, Vacho Misha Osek Batalma Torah, Zemet Ale, Shenemra Matana Nachliel, Menachliel Bamot. Torah Tzivalana Moshe, Morasha Kilat Yaakov, our Torah is our Matana, it's our Morasha, it's our inheritance, it's our gift. And being the beneficiaries of this gift means that we do not think of the Torah from the perspective of ro'i, but from the perspective of muchsak. That being a bechor, that is what is the chazaka, if you will, kibiyachal of Hashem, of muchsak of Hashem, and being the bechor means that we need to be machzik. That we cannot have a passive status, but we need to grab a hold of our mesorah. We need to study it. We need to immerse ourselves in it and integrate it into our lives. Eitz chayim hi l'machazikim ba v'tomcham e'ushar. That we need to be machzik it. We need to own it as B'ni B'chori Yisrael. And that approach of being machzik it affects everything. It affects how we study it, our dedication, our hasmada at all times, throughout the day and deep, deep into the night. And it impacts the way that it applies to all aspects of our lives. You know, the Rav famously talks about the question the Tosfos raised, or the Rishonim talk about, of Lasok B'Divrei Torah. What does it mean? How is it, or why is it, that we make one bracha in the morning of Lasok B'Divrei Torah, and then we go about our day? You know, we learn a little, but then, you know, people go to work, they eat, they spend time with their families, they do community, and then they learn all at different points throughout their day as well. But isn't there a hafsaka? Isn't there a break? How do you make a bracha in the beginning of Asok B'Divrei Torah, in the beginning of the day, and then you don't need to make another bracha again? And the Rav speaks about how Torah is in one subconscious, like a mother always thinks about her son, wherever her son is, wherever she's doing in her day, that Torah, like a mother to her son, is always in one's subconscious, always is one subconscious. And in addition, what that means, I think, is that it's not just subconscious at this latent level. It's that Torah applies in everything you do in your life. Everything you do in your life that's governed by Torah is la'asok b'divrei Torah. If all of your aspects are infused by the spirit of Torah, if your whole life is infused by the spirit of Torah, then everything is lasok b'divrei Torah. You know, I've told the story previously, but it really, I think, reflects so much about our yeshiva. When a number of years ago, father came to me and said that, you know, his son was a big one of the big masmidim in our base medrash, and he was learning all the time, and, you know, he davened in Gluck, so his tefillah took on a very lengthy period of time in his day. And then after he graduated, he landed like a very prestigious job in some major firm. Now he's working all the time. He has markedly less time to learn his tefillah. He's not davening Gluck anymore, so things are a little more moving a little more quickly. Where is his avodas Hashem? Where is his avodas Hashem now? I told him that, you know, what we teach in our yeshiva is, of course, your avodas Hashem is in your learning and it's in your davening. Of course, that's true. But we teach that your avodas Hashem is in every aspect of your life. The way you act with honesty and integrity, menschlichkeit and decency, especially when you go out in the world proudly with your kippah as a Jew. Okay, your the opportunity to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. Everything you do is part of your avodas Hashem. You know, the tefillah that perhaps best represents Yeshiva University is Mincha. I love Mincha for Yeshiva University. You know, the Torah tells us, V'yetze Yitzchak L'suach Basadeh. Yitzchak went out L'suach Basadeh. What does L'suach mean? Who? So Rashi talks about according to the Gemara and Chazal that it's conversation that Lasuach Pasdeh is the mucker for Mincha. That he went lifnot Erev, he went out into the field and he davened Mincha. And the pshat of Lasuach Pasdeh, as the Rashbam says, is Lasuach means to plant. That Yitzchak was a farmer and Yitzchak planted. And I think that it's not a coincidence that Lasuach could mean plant, and it also means to pray. Because what we teach in our yeshiva is that not just that you need to daven while you're planting and you need to find the time for mincha, of course that's true, but even your planting needs to be a kind of tefillah. That everything you're doing in your life needs to be part of your avodas Hashem. And that's what we teach here. That's what it means, Eitz Chaimi L'machazikim Ba. That everything you're doing, it's a Torah. It's not just a Torah Emet that we study. It's a Torah Chaim that we bring to life in every aspect of our lives. That's number one. That is a chazaka. That is being muchzak. You need to be muchzak in Torah. Muchzak in Torah. Muchzak. It's your machzik Torah and everything about it. You know, the way you learn, the way you live your life, it's filled with Torah. That's number one. The second aspect is yakir. You have to remember that this matana, this gift, all stems from your personal relationship with Hashem. The whole root of Pesach night is ani hu v'lo acher. That Hashem did it himself. There's no one else, not a shliach. He, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, came, Yetzias Mitzrayim, that night, like a father to a bechor. Hashem loves you, that Hashem believes in you. And Hashem is makir you. He's makir. The B'ni B'chori Yisrael, it's a din in Hakara, it's yakir. Hashem is makir. He recognizes you. He sees you. He sees you for who you are. And he loves you as his B'chor. That the root of all of our Avas Hashem is this warm, personal, paternal, loving relationship. And this is the root of our own self-development. You know, in our yeshiva, we don't believe that there's one prefab way, that each person has to follow one set, there's one box that everybody has to fit in. But that each person is unique and everyone is holy and you're each created with a tzelem Elokim and Hashem loves each of you and believes in each of you. And that should fuel your motivation to take yourselves and to take your lives seriously. To find and develop your kochot. I tell over stories repeatedly on purpose, for those will be the ones you remember. The one that I tell at this point is Chariots of Fire, where if you remember this movie that you've never seen, about a runner spends his whole life running marathon sprints and is born to a family of pastors. And at one point, his sister comes over to him and he says, why are you wasting your whole life running? And he answered that God has given me the gift of speed. And when I run, I feel his presence. That we all have a different way of feeling Hashem's presence. And what you're supposed to be doing in your life is developing that. Developing your Tzelem Elokim. Developing who you are. And at YU, you're developing, you are, of course, in your Torah. But it's not just in your Torah. It's in your Mada as well. You could be a computer scientist, an artist, a financial guru, an educator, a social worker. Whoever you are, developing those aspects of yourself is finding your Tzelem Elokim, that education is not just a window into the world, it's a light into your soul. And your Tzelem Elokim is what Hashem loves. He loves you like a father to a child, and it should fuel you with enormous self-confidence and motivation. It should also inspire you to act to everyone around you with love. You know, there's one of the interesting things about being president of YU is I really meet a lot of interesting people that I would never otherwise meet. So there's a man, he's this very successful businessman. I'm going to bring him into the yeshiva. I love him. He's a person filled with such values. He has a Sefer Torah right in his lobby, in his office. He's like this great, Midtown office. You walk in this office, he has a huge Sefer Torah. I'm like, why do you have a Sefer Torah in the office? He has hundreds of employees. I'm like, why do you have a Sefer Torah? He goes, Rabbi, everything we do in this office is about the Torah. I'm like, I thought it was about real estate. He's like, everything we do is about the Torah. And he told me that everything is about love. Everything is about love. That Hashem loves us so much. Hashem loves us so much. He says, if you want to know how to make someone happy, if you want to show somebody gratitude, the best thing you can do is help his children. If you want somebody, if you really like the thing that somebody most appreciates in their lives, if you help them, if you do something to help their children, they are so grateful. That's the best thing you can do to somebody. If you're kind to their children, if you want to show love for Hashem, he told me, be kind to his children. Hashem loves you. He loves all. They're all Bechor. Be kind to his children. So yesterday we had a Zoom call with the rabbi of Odessa from Ukraine. The Zoom call, there's about 50 students on the call. We met the rabbi from Odessa and his brother was in Charkov. The Russian just came out. He was telling the stories. It was great. Shootings and bombs and uncertainty and children like crazy, worried about food, medicine. And he had this chiyuch, he had this smile. This whole time he was smiling, so large. And we're like asking him, and Yadidji was interviewing him. And like, why are you so happy? And he said to us, you know, that in the past, when you looked at Am Yisrael, it was so divided. So divided. Every group, every Jew, this group fighting with that group, fighting with this group. So, but sitting in Ukraine right now, during this time, I have felt the true love and unity of Am Yisrael. That all Jews everywhere, all peoples, you know, Reform, Conservative, Agudas Yisrael, the JDC, everyone has been calling him, sending them food, sending them money. Their Yeshiva University is showing their great concern and their love. He thinks that Hashem is looking down with such joy because Hashem sees his children coming together. And it's all rooted in the sense of Yakir, this personal relationship with Hashem. It's understanding that Hashem loves, it's love, it's a love relationship. It should fuel our own self-improvement, our development, and our relationships with the brothers and sisters around us. And finally, so we have Muchzak and Yakir, finally, Davar Shelo Bol Olam. We can spend our entire lives waiting for our lives to start. We can spend years deferring our responsibility to the world. I'll start when I'll have a family. I'll begin after I'm more set in my job. I'll focus when I'm retired. But we cannot defer our responsibility as a Bechor. It's already Bala Olam. Our responsibility to ourselves, to our families, our community, and to the world has already begun. And there's so much you could do in this world. There's so much impact, so much opportunity, so much Kiddush Hashem. And we saw it so dramatically a couple of weeks ago in Vienna. 28 Yeshiva University students go to Vienna, 500 refugees, another 500 coming. These people coming with nothing but the shirt on their back. Many of them with their fathers still back in Ukraine, not able to leave. Children who don't know if they're ever going to see their fathers again. What can we possibly do? What can these students at Yeshiva University possibly do to help these people? So let me tell you a story that one of the mothers told me. She said to me that the Vienna community registered their children in their school, and they come to school and they're told that the next day is Purim. And on Purim, they need to bring in costumes. And the children came back with tears in their eyes and say, we have nothing. How are we going to have costumes? And that night, out of the blue, like angels from Shemayim, Yeshiva University students showed up with hundreds of costumes to give out to their children. It was the first time, this mother said to me, that her child smiled after leaving Ukraine. And the element of joy that our students brought and spread to this community, helping them make Purim, giving them a sense that other people cared about them and thought about them and were machazek them. It was palpable and it was self-evident. And this is what we can do in so many ways. It wasn't just the refugees. Since I've came back, the roshem, the impression that we made on the Vienna Jewish community as a whole, on parliament, we met with the president of the Austrian parliament. I've had requests to start an exchange program with the University of Vienna, now with the Yeshiva University students. I don't know what we're going to do with the Vienna students, but an exchange program. The high school, the Jewish high school, now wants to send their kids to MTA and figure out how they could do a program. And somebody, another community called me and said, I want to start a YU Vienna. I've already rented the space. Okay. Now we were there for 6 days, literally 6 days. And this is what we do. You know, in so many ways, we're living in times of darkness. You know, for the Jewish people with the risings of anti-Semitism, for the world with conflict and war in the headlines. And what we do is shed light. To paraphrase Rav Kook, we dispel darkness by shedding light. We shed light when we have a glowing Batei Medrash packed with students studying Torah late into the night, not just to become rabbis and educators, of course that, but also to become leaders of industry, professionals, and entrepreneurs of the next generation. We shed light when the world sees our success, even our athletic success, with pride of people with kippot, singing Hatikva, acting with sportsmanship. We shed light when our students proactively go out into the world to help others and serve as shining examples of how committed and proud Jews act with compassion and love for all. It is not a davar shelo bo olam. It is right now. The opportunities for you are right now. And as the Bechor, B'ni Bechori Yisrael, we understand that we play a central purpose as a conduit of Hashem's values in the world. And that this status comes with privileges, but also responsibilities. That it's immutable. It applies to all of B'nai Yisrael. That we need to study, internalize, and apply the values and teachings of our matana, that is also our nachala. That our whole self-image and the way we treat others is rooted in our love of Hashem and Hashem's love for us, and that we have a mission now to be a conduit of our values and to sanctify God's name in the world. And for anyone who's figured this out already, what I've been talking about is our five core Torah values. Now, I am thrilled that it is part of the Purim Shkiel. I feel that we wouldn't have made it until we made it into the Purim Shkiel. And then I found out when I was in Vienna that we also made it in Eretz Yisrael's Purim Shkiel. And then I know that we've really, you know, made a roshem when other people are talking about it as well. And I'll tell you, after I first spoke about it, this is a true story. When I first spoke about our five core Torah values, it was I met a Hasidic man at a dinner, and he told me, Rabbi, I heard your speech, and it was unbelievable. I can't believe what Yeshiva University stands for. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I need you to meet our Admor, and you have to go and tell them what you stand for. I mean, it's amazing, the Torah values. I love these Torah values. Everything you said was amazing, except one word. I loved your Torah values. It was great, except one word. Everything. I'm like, what was the one word? He said, Tzion. That's an important word. That's an important word. Okay, and these are our values. Our core is emes, is the emes of the Torah. It's our roots that we nourish, and we seek truth where it's found. It's our core. And we develop, ki adam etz hasadeh, each tree different, your own skills and strengths, and we bring it out into Torah tchayim v'avat chesed. We apply it, etz chayim hi l'machaz ikimbat, to all of our actions, and ultimately it's a flower of tzmichat gulatenu, of bringing it out and bringing the geula. These are the five core Torah values. And, you know, instead of just signs, in addition to signs, that was the first step, we're also developing material, and we're going to talk a lot more about it. We've been speaking so much to our Rashi Yeshiva, our senior Rashi Yeshiva, our Mechanchim, Mechanchot, and Stern. We've had very productive conversations. I'm going to talk more how these apply to not just our core values, but the core of our lives. And this is all about the Pesach story, because it's our hashkafa that's rooted in the Rav, but it didn't start from the Rav. It started from Har Sinai. It's about the Pesach story being the Bechor, and that we will not rest until we get to Lashana Haba, Rishlayim Habnia. Let me close with one final thought. The description of Bnei Bechor Yisrael takes place in a very specific context in the Chumash. God is instructing Moshe that he should tell Paro, go to Paro and tell him, Ko Amar Hashem, Bnei Bechori Yisrael. And our status as firstborn specifically emerges from the context of this dialogue and confrontation. And it's the root of the whole basic story, which is not just about freedom, but is about purpose and mission. Redemption is not just about liberation. It's to achieve God's goals for us in this world. So God tells Moshe to announce to Paro, Bnei Bechor Yisrael, we have a mission and we have a purpose. And we have a responsibility to be Avdei Hashem, not Avdei Paro, to go out and illuminate the world with our Torah values and to move history forward. And last week, I did just that. Last week, I was in London at a conference against anti-Semitism. And we had a few hours in between, a few hours free. So I went with my colleague, Sue Halpern, and we ran into the British Museum. And there's a wing of the British Museum of Ancient History. And there we saw they had a script that came from Nebuchadnezzar that described the time of Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuchadnezzar's conquests. And then right next to it, there are these two huge gates for a palace of Sargon, who was the father of Sancheriv. And right across from there, there was a huge pillar with a big sculpture of Ramses II. The scholars understand is Paro. And they showed the picture of where this pillar stood in Egypt. And you knew that thousands of years ago, our forefathers stood in front of this very pillar, this very sculpture, and were quaking in fear. And there I stood at the British Museum, going to a wing, looking at Nebuchadnezzar, and looking at Sancheriv, and looking at Paro, and seeing where they are, and seeing where we are today. Sitting here learning Hashem's Torah, sitting in the Beis Medrash, living a life of Torah and mitzvos, not just for ourselves, but for examples for the world. And I have to say, I was thinking to myself that I will, Bezrat Hashem, spend Seder night in Israel, in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. And I stood in front of Ramses II, and I said, Bnei Bechori Yisrael, we're here, and we're moving history forward. Chag Kashuv V'Sameach.